You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, we got a new super cool party people only giveaway for you.
It's only for party people. If you are not a party person, you just don't listen.
Get out.
Yeah.
A fun March giveaway for y'all, because we just like to give stuff away. It's just like a fun little way to spice things up.
It is. And March is just like a cool month.
Yeah. You know? Like, Ides of March and
St. Patrick's
Day. I don't know why my brain went there.
Like, I don't either. That was unique.
Yeah. St. Patrick's Day is probably a more festive. Yeah. So for our March giveaway, we've got some cool stuff. We have a Art History Babes t-shirt in black.
Classic black.
We have a really cool book about some, it's drawings by some Venetian masters.
Tiepolo. Yeah.
Ginny on the Italian over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also got a Rauschenberg inspired mug, some white sage for witchy vibes, also just general good smells.
Yeah.
White sage, cone incense, not actual white sage.
Yes, yeah, incense vibes. And we got a Norman Rockwell puzzle. So really a wide array of of
arts related goods.
Feast.
Yeah, definitely.
For you.
Definitely. It's a fun giveaway, I think. And to be entered to win, all you have to do is head over to our Patreon. Patreon.com/arthistorybabes and become a patron and help support the production of this podcast and other Art History Babes content. Every dollar that you pledge to the Art History Babes is an entry. So $1 a month, that's one entry. $5 mm-hmm. a month, that's five entries. And if you're wondering yourself, hey, I'm already a patron, I'm screwed. I can't be a part of this super cool party people giveaway. You're not. All you got to do is up your pledge. If you up your pledge by a couple dollars, then you get a couple entries. So everyone has a chance to enter however many times you would like. This is for the duration of March. So from March 1st to March 31st.
Mm. That feels right.
Yeah, there's 31 days in March.
Sure.
If you get on our Patreon from the 1st through the 31st, your entries will be counted, and then at the beginning of April, we will pull a name out of a hat. It's going to be a good time.
It is.
From Cabernet to Mollet, they're here to slay the Art History Babes.
Art History Babe Briefs.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie, and we are the Art History Babes.
And we got a fun little Art History Babe brief for you today.
Woo!
This one is fun because it's connected to a full-length episode that will be coming out next week with our friends from Sartl, See Art Differently. We did a full-length episode on women of abstract expressionism with them. It is jam-packed.
It is. We ran out of time.
We did. We ran out of time. We could not talk about everyone that we wanted to talk about. So as kind of a little precursor, we're going to do an episode today on Elaine de Kooning.
Can't leave her out.
You can't. You really... You
just can't.
You really can't in terms of this topic.
And coincidentally, this never happens, but we are recording on the anniversary, the 29th anniversary of her passing.
Yeah, it's
purely
crazy.
Coincidental.
It really is. I was doing my research at like 2:30 in the morning, and yeah, she died February 1st, 1989. And I was like, hey, that's tomorrow. So kind of crazy. So this is a little homage to Elaine. Rest in peace, Elaine.
Mm-hmm. To start us off, I have a quote. Inspiration is indispensable to my work, but it's hard to come by. It is there or it is not. It is a gift of the gods. Oh, Elaine.
That's actually a really interesting concept, like the idea that like inspiration and like creative genius kind of moves through you.
I feel like there's two camps and they're kind of opposing camps in that way, that some people believe it is almost a divine intervention or others believe that it's humanism and all in the power of man and it's all
In terms of that topic, I think there could be some really interesting ideas regarding gender.
Ooh.
Because so gender is obviously a big topic in this women of abstract expressionism thing, especially because there was such an interesting gender relationship going on in the abstract expressionism movement. One, it was a hyper-masculine movement. It was defined as a hyper-masculine movement. Two, there were a lot of couples, a lot of male-female couples involved in abstract expressionism. So there's this really interesting push and pull of gender dynamics, which we talk about in the full-length episode. But I feel like with that concept, it's also very interesting because I think there's more of an impetus to say, like, male artists as being genius and female artists are a little more open to the idea of having genius, letting genius come in, at least in this time period, because of gender identification. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could buy into that for sure.
Yeah, I'm just kind of spitballing right now.
No, but I could get on board with that.
Right, notion. right. So, Elaine Marie Catherine Fried, was born on March 12th, 1918. She's a Pisces babe, so a water sign. I love my creative water signs. They're just a powerhouse of creativity and emotion.
I would love to know her moon sign, though, because she comes off as so kind of brazen and a little callous.
Which Pisces aren't
not. Actually, never mind. This is not that kind of podcast. Carry on.
Anyway, she was born in Brooklyn, New York, and developed a love for the arts as a young child, long before she took on the name de Kooning. The oldest of four children, her sister recalls that their mother was not especially attentive as a parent, but instilled a strong love of the arts. She would often take Elaine to the Metropolitan Museum of Art to expose her to famous works. Her mother was sent to a psychiatric ward for a year, and Elaine became the surrogate parent for her younger siblings. She excelled in high school, but dropped out after only a few weeks at Hunter College. She then enrolled at Leonardo da Vinci Art School for a while, but ended up leaving for the American Artists School. During this time, she joined the Young Communist League and became active in the Communist Party, which is another interesting thing about abstract expressionism. You can go to our full-length abstract expressionism episode about this, is that it was kind of seen as the all-American movement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, AbX was literally used by the CIA to, like, make America look like we were very creative and artistic. It was a tool of capitalism, yet a lot of abstract expressionists were communists.
A hole in your plan, CIA.
Kind of crazy.
Oh. So Willem de Kooning.
Willem.
In 1938, Elaine met Willem de Kooning, but there were no sparks at their initial introduction. To Elaine, de Kooning was Bill. She called him affectionately, which I just love. And he convinced her to begin drawing classes with him. A photographer friend of the couple later recalled that Bill was incredibly in love with her, but she didn't treat him very well at the beginning. She would lean back on the couch and say, "Bill, cigarette," and he would leap to get it. I know. Such an awesome visual.
I know, right?
I mean, also kind of sad, but... On December 9th, 1943, Elaine and William married, and this probably won't surprise you, at a small, understated ceremony at City Hall. It's all kind
of... keeping it chill.
Yeah, stoic. All of this. 5 years later, shortly after Willem's first solo exhibition at the Charles Egan Gallery, Elaine began an affair with Charles Egan. Willem also carried on a series of extramarital affairs, most famously with Ruth Klingham in the 1950s, who would later become Jackson Pollock's mistress.
Man, just like an Ab X mistress.
Right? Like, isn't that such an interesting concept?
Yeah, right. I mean, I guess they all run in the same circle, you know?
Yeah. De Kooning reportedly carried on brief affairs with other artists over the years, being Elaine, not William. Although I'm sure he did too.
Probably. Who knows?
I think they both just did.
Artists, man.
Yeah. I think it was like a kind of open, but also like passive aggressive situation.
Yeah,
that's the vibe
definitely.
I'm getting.
Early on, de Kooning was influenced by the Cubists, but by the mid-1940s, she began leaning towards abstraction. De Kooning is most often connected to abstract expressionism. This is for many reasons, including her name, which is her husband's name, her writings on the topic, and her fierce love of the style. But the breadth of her style was pretty vast, and it incorporated abstract expressionism, but it also reached into other areas. Her work is a clear example of figural abstract expressionism. Her most known works are portraits, essentially. Mm-hmm. She has interestingly been characterized as reversing the trope of male painting the female model.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's this painting a male model through the female gaze, essentially, mm-hmm. which is very interesting.
Very empowering.
Right?
That she just decided, like, I'm going to paint men.
Mm-hmm. That seems so simple.
It's so simple that you wouldn't think of it.
I know, right? Like, you wouldn't even think that's a thing, but she did it, and she like did it full force. From the late 1940s through the 80s, she painted basketball players in a loose expressionist style. Later in her life, she was sought out and respected for her portraits, mostly of men. In 1962, she was commissioned to paint a portrait of John F. Kennedy. Throughout 1963, she spent her time fine-tuning this portrait. She collected hundreds of photographs of Kennedy and drew shorthand sketches of him whenever he appeared on TV. Needless to say, she took this commission very seriously. After seeing him in person, she didn't have him sit for her necessarily, but she was able to see him in person, and she described Kennedy as incandescent and golden. And her portraits of him were an attempt to capture his charisma.
So interesting that she seems so enamored by him.
Right.
Because she embodies this kind of cool girl persona.
That, right.
Like, not super affected by much, but
and
she seemed to have been very affected by John F. Kennedy.
I know. And so many people were affected by John F. Kennedy. So I'm almost like surprised that something that was so mainstream like appealed to Elaine. But she was incredibly affected by him. She was so invested in him as a figure and a subject that she stopped painting for several months after his assassination.
I wonder what that would feel like, because she invested so much time,
right?
You know, understanding him and trying to represent him so authentically. She probably felt like she really knew him.
Oh, yeah. I think that can be kind of a relatable feeling. You know, it's why a lot of people have really intense reactions, I think, when celebrities die, especially if it's a celebrity that you were super invested in mm-hmm. some way. If you like gave a part of your life to understanding a musician or something, like, it can kind of feel like you lost a friend, mm-hmm. even though you never like met that person, or if you didn't spend a lot of time with that person. And so I feel like with this, she probably felt like she lost someone that she was close to in some way, you know?
And then it's compounded with the political side, where it's like, if she really believed in what he was doing and where he would have taken the country, then double hit.
I wonder how Shepard Fairey would feel if Obama died.
I don't know, because he kind of started to turn on Obama
right?
a little bit, but then he came back recently, so it's, I don't know.
I feel like it'd be a very different thing, but that was just where my mind went.
Well, that's our most recent example.
I know,
so
right?
Where else would it go? So some other notable works by Elaine. In 1946, she painted a self-portrait, which is interesting because it's so figural.
It's so good.
It's
really love this painting.
I do too.
I love the color. I'm such a fan of mustard. Oh, mustard.
Yeah. So it's got this mustard wall, and she's sitting in what almost looks like it could be an art studio, but she has a pad and charcoal rather than like an easel and painting. And she's doing the classic staring down the viewer. Like, she is looking into your soul with a raised brow. And it's kind of got a little bit of loose brush work, so it's not a tight portrait, but it captures her, I think.
Oh, definitely. I kind of want a copy of this to like put on my wall it to would, just yeah. like get my shit in gear every day.
Oh my god, it'd be great in like an office space.
Oh my so god, motivating. I would just be like, Elaine, I'm doing it for you, girl.
Elaine's looking at you like, why aren't you working?
Yeah, for real.
What do you have to do better than work?
I know, and she's got like the coffee, and she's just like, you need to get your shit together.
She's got her turtleneck, which I love. Turtle sisters for life. And just an interesting tidbit is that she painted this at her and William's poorest. So she sold it to her sister for $20, which at the time she considered good money. So a little bit out of necessity this was painted, but the results are awesome. And I'm glad that, not glad that she was that poor, but I'm glad that this work came of it.
Yeah, right, right.
And then Bacchus number 3, which comes from the Bacchus series, painted in 1978. During a visit to Paris in 76, she saw a 19th century Bacchus-inspired sculpture in the Garden of Luxembourg and did these series of paintings based on the Roman god of wine. Go see our full-length Bacchanal episode if you haven't already.
That's
learn
a throwback.
All about Bacchus.
That's a good one. Check that out.
This one's so interesting, though, because it's not necessarily a super well-known work. It's a painting based on a sculpture, and if you didn't have any previous knowledge of the sculpture, it would look a little disorienting, albeit beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I loved it.
The colors are amazing, the movement's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it just really all comes together in your mind when you can see the actual sculpture. Yeah. She nails the color scheme, she nails the brush strokes and the movement, because as you know, sculptures like that, it looks like a fountain sculpture. They wear and they kind of get this earthen look where they have streaks and chunks come out and they just look a little worn. And she really embodies that in this painting. And I just love the line work, too.
Oh, yeah. I love the lines. Oh, those dark so like contours are so good.
It looks like this would be a great print. Like,
oh, yeah.
It looks like it could be a print. And it was just interestingly the first time she ever used acrylic paint. She wasn't an acrylic paint girl, but she used it for this one. And I think that kind of shows in a little bit of the, I don't want to call it patchy, but acrylic paint isn't as blendable as oil. Yeah. And I think that shows through in this painting.
Definitely. In 1983, de Kooning began a series based on the Paleolithic caves of Lascaux, France, titled Cave Walls. She depicts outlines of animals such as deer, bison, and goats. Elaine saw Paleolithic art as an example of the roots of abstract expressionism. So there's this kind of improvisation, spontaneity, and definitely, at least in regards to Elaine de Kooning's work, use of contour. She uses contour in a lot of her paintings, and it's very clear in cave art. It's a lot of expressive contour, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And she incorporated those things into her work. So when she saw these caves, it's not surprising to me anyways that it resonated with her. And so she began the series based on that experience and kind of interestingly incorporating the oldest form of visual art with what was incredibly contemporary at the time. It's very, very interesting because you're talking about like whole scale of human creation at that point.
Right? I just love too how she uses her experiences again and again and again. These things that she's painting oftentimes are something that she just experiences or comes across and is inspired by and goes and paints it. There's no like seeking out some ultimate theme to bind all of her work and stuff. There's something so simple in her thought process and in her art making that I love as an overthinker.
Yeah.
I just think it's refreshing. It's interesting. It makes her a lot more relatable.
Definitely.
So Elaine was not only an artist, but began writing art criticism early in her painting career. She worked as an editorial associate at Art News under Thomas Hess, and there she wrote articles on Hans Hofmann, Arshile Gorky, Franz Klein, Joseph Alpers, and Mark Rothko. Her writings made abstract expressionism more readily accessible to a wider audience, which is no easy feat and really commendable.
Yeah, and one we are totally behind.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. Like,
an OG art history babe.
For real. So Elaine just an amazing woman. Once again, unfortunately, tends to be overshadowed by her husband. Not that his work was not amazing as well, but she was her own thing, and she created some really, really incredible images. Definitely check out our full-length episode on Women of Abstract Expressionism, which will be coming out next week. So check that out for more discussion of just this idea of really the culture of abstract expressionism, what it meant for women, and some different women at different time periods that worked in the style of abstract expressionism. But before we sign off, I want to end with a quote by Elaine. "Women can also be creative in total isolation. I know excellent women artists who do original work without any response to speak of. Maybe they are used to lack of feedback. Maybe they are tougher."
Yes.
Nailed it.
So good.
It is so good. Love it. Love you, Elaine.
Kind of reminds me of some sentiments of Joan Mitchell in the full-length episode. Oh, so you definitely. Guys really round out the whole thing and listen to both.
And Lee Krasner, too.
Oh, yep.
All of them. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Definitely check out our website, arthistorybabes.com. Head over to our Patreon, all that jazz. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
Willem.
The Art History Babes podcast is made possible by support from our lovely listeners via Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes to help keep the Art History Babes going and for access to bonus content.